From the Hope 205 Studios, a Joe Louville Productions studio venture.
Imagine a workplace where leaders focus on empowering their teams, where the growth and well-being of people are at the heart of every decision. This isn't a distant dream. This is Activating Hope.
Driving high levels of employee engagement at all levels can propel an organization forward. The research is clear, but the implementation is often difficult. Using the latest in decision science and a story-driven framework, instead of a one-size-fits-all strategy that rarely work, during this episode of Activating Hope, we'll dive into the behavioral economic principles that drive higher levels of employee engagement and detail how leaders at all levels can unleash the power of a highly motivated team. Brad Shuck is one of the most recognized experts on employee engagement, organizational culture, and employee health and well-being in the world. He's a sought-after international keynote speaker, entrepreneur, and global consultant to some of the most admired companies across the globe. Dr. Shuck is the most published and widely recognized expert on employee engagement and organizational culture in the United States. An award-winning speaker, author, and thought leader that we're honored to have on this episode of Activating Hope. So very not only excited, but honored to have Dr. Brad Shuck with us on this episode of Activating Hope. He is an award-winning speaker, author, and thought leader, and also a dear friend of mine that I have the pleasure of knowing personally and professionally. And he's just, you're going to love our time together because he has got so much to share. And I'm looking so forward to this conversation around employee engagement that you have dedicated so much of your work to this space. And so, you know, I was thinking about this last night as I was preparing for our conversation about how employee engagement has really changed through the years. And I was comparing it to even my work in the leadership space pre and post COVID. I would say we would have defined employee engagement slightly differently. So I'm just curious, why does it feel different? I mean, what are you seeing in your research and your work with organizations?
Yeah. First, thank you so much for having me. I have been looking forward to this conversation for weeks now. And I think you're right. I think you're absolutely correct. We've seen engagement shift, even in the ways in which we measure employee engagement. And I think part of that is we're seeing employees integrate areas of their life that have traditionally not been integrated in decisions around work. And people are thinking about work differently. The value proposition of work has shifted and changed. And that's I think that's a direct, a lasting effect of COVID and what we kind of went through and this isolation that happened and the movement to online and virtual connections. And I think people are still kind of holding on to some of that because they liked it. They liked being able to be with their families. They liked being able to have agency over how and when their work got done. And they're holding on to that. And I think when we consider how work has changed, what the ask of work is now, it's different from 5 years ago. And as a result of that, engagement looks different. Belonging looks different. Purpose looks different. Those two things have always been important. Like I can't think back to times when my first couple of jobs as a teenage kid, you know, I wanted to be a part of a team and I wanted to belong and I wanted to have a sense of meaningful work and purpose. But now that feels different for me. And I'm making decisions about my work based on that. Now, I do think we've lost some things. And if I'm being honest with you, Hope, I struggle with it because I personally really enjoy logging in from my house, having coffee with my wife in the morning by the fire pit and kind of hanging out.
I love that. I love your post. I was like, I want to go there for coffee.
You can come. Just come on by. Come on by. Come on by.
Okay, I may take you up on that.
So I love that piece of it. And yet work as a result of that can feel transactional. And I think that's a significant change. That for some people, work was a defining identity of who they were, and it was transformational for them. And now work feels transactional. And transaction works as long as status quo is in place. And when the status quo shifts, transaction falls apart. And I think we have to be mindful of that as leaders. But I also think we live different lives. And I think that I would tell you my quality of life is better. I like being around my community more and my family more. But I've perhaps lost some of those hallway conversations that I would have with colleagues. And work relationships, again, they're transactional for many versus transformational.
Well, and it's interesting about that point because, you know, you're seeing a lot. There are some organizations that I've been working with. They are making people come back 100%.
Sure.
There is no hybrid. There is no more remote. Then you've got organizations that are sticking with the hybrid. Some are sticking with the remote. So how does all that really influence employee engagement strategies then when you're looking at a mix of so many things?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I get asked this question a lot, and I've been asked this question a lot over the last couple of years, you know, what's the right decision? And there isn't a one size fits all model for this. I think my recommendation for anybody who's making decisions about how work will be executed, whether that's in-person, remote, hybrid, that you make a decision. I think the worst thing you could do is not make a decision, because then everybody is kind of like in limbo and nobody knows what the rules are. But then to communicate the why behind that, you know, look, we believe that our culture is about people and relationships, and we want to connect and continue to connect people. And there are some jobs, some positions, some industries where being physically present together is a huge benefit. And there are other places where, and other organizations that might make other decisions. Now, when it comes to driving employee engagement, I think it changes the execution of the strategy dependent on how that work is getting done. So if we're remote or virtual or hybrid, how do I engage my remote employees? How do I help them feel like they're connected and they're belonging? And that sense of purpose is really central to the work that they're doing. What I see is that sometimes remote means disconnected.
Absolutely.
Not top of mind.
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. I was at an event last week, and I was running a workshop for a group of IT professionals. And they wanted to run a hybrid event. And there was a surprise. We came in the room. There were two people who couldn't be there, so they were going to log in remotely. Instead of sitting around tables, I had them circle their chairs up like we were kind of in like a group therapy session. Well, I brought the remote people with us. Instead of leaving them out on the outside of the room, I physically pulled the table into the circle so that those people who were remote were just as connected as anybody else that was physically there. And I think those are the kinds of things that we need to think about it more.
Absolutely.
When it comes to remote.
Well, and you know, the word as you were sharing that story that comes to mind for me that I coach leaders on is you have to be intentional with your remote workers. You
yes.
have to be intentional about every connection, every communication, because as
That's
you
right.
said, often they can feel not
sure.
a part of the team, that they
yeah.
don't belong.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to work even harder because while we are pulling people back, or some organizations are, I don't think it's going to go back to the way it was 100%.
I don't think we'll ever go all the way back.
And I don't either. I think you're going to lose good people because people have found they like this. Just as you said, you love going out to the fire pit, having coffee with your wife, being able to start your day that
sure.
way. And so I just think now that people have gotten a taste of that, that it's possible.
Yeah.
And we can still get our work done.
Sure. The value proposition is just, it's shifted. I love the idea of intentionality behind that and leveraging technologies, right? Like employee engagement is oftentimes not found in the big things. It's not found in the campaigns and the marketing and the survey every year and the all company meeting that people have after the results come in. It's found in a quick text to a colleague. Hey, checking in. How you doing? What's going on? It's found in an email. It's found in a comment in a meeting where someone empowers another voice in the team's meeting that they're in to help them feel a sense of connectedness. Employee engagement is oftentimes grounded in the things that are easy to do, but also equally easy not to do.
Right. Again, if we're not being intentional about, hey, have I texted this person in a while? Have I checked in?
Yeah.
How are they doing? Well, and right. brings up a really good point about, and I've heard you speak about this before, and I think just with all the talk about mental health and the importance of all that, the connection between employee engagement and health.
Yeah.
And is there any research out there about how work is impacting our mental and physical health, either for better or for worse?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're at an interesting time in the history of work, but also within the history of our nation and the world, where there's a lot of instability everywhere. And what I'm seeing is emotions like frustration or confusion or high levels of anxiety and the need for some sense of control over all of the many spinning things I have in my life. What I find is when work is a stable place where work is, there's a sense of community and a sense of belonging and purpose. And I know I've used those words a lot, but they are central cornerstone. They are the blocking and tackling of employee engagement. If I belong and I feel like I'm a part of, and I know that my work has meaning to it, and you can't help but get like engagement comes from that space. But to the degree that work for me is a place of stability and purpose, and I know what to expect, and I can do that, we see direct connections between employee engagement and health. We did some research at the University of Louisville, where I work. I've worked at U of L for now for 15 years, where we partnered with the School of Medicine to explore how does work physically impact our biology. And that's a mad science question. It's crazy.
That is. I'm interested to know.
So we had we collected biological samples. So we and I'll let your mind go where you want to on that. And but we asked people to give us some indicators of how their body was functioning and sweat tests and glands and blood and all that kind of good stuff. And then we gave them at a different time, a battery of employee engagement surveys, things around belonging and isolation and work, and asked them to respond to that. And then we took those two things, the biological samples, the readings that you might get like back from a doctor, a chart, and the numbers, and we smashed those things together into the same database and ran some predictive models. And turns out that when people feel like they can engage, and there's indicators of that, right? There's all kinds of indicators about what engagement actually looks like in a workspace, that when people say that they were engaged, their biology told us that they were healthier, that their long-term health risk for things like diabetes and heart disease, that those things decreased over time. But when people told us that they were disconnected, they were isolated, they were disengaged, they didn't feel like they were connected, that those risk indicators went up. And we looked at something very specific called catecholamines. Catecholamines are like crossing guards for your body. They tell your body when and how to release certain chemicals like dopamine or serotonin in your body. And these are stress indicators. And as your stress goes up, your risk for these kinds of chronic disease states, those things go up. And so we found a connection between employee engagement specifically and levels of catecholamines and how those chemicals are released in your body.
Wow.
It's what's funny about
That's
that
fascinating.
It's like, what is work? Does work make you sick? Maybe, kind of. Maybe. But
I mean, and if you're not happy, think about how many hours we spend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Working. And if you're totally. Not happy in that space, then absolutely, I can see it. And it's going to manifest. Stress will manifest itself somehow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you said, it mentally, physically, it'll come out.
Yeah,
it does. If it doesn't have some way to process it.
For sure.
So really thinking about that then, the organizational responsibility to be able to align employee well-being so they don't get to this sixth state with engagement efforts. How does an organization make this? Because when I think about this, I think about it has to be culturally speaking. I mean, it can't just be, it's got to be something that's embedded in the culture that we think this is important. So how do organizations even get started with that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's something we've thought a lot about. We recently wrapped a project with a large company here in the U.S. who was struggling with benefits usage. So many companies spend a ton of money on benefits. And outside of health insurance, a lot of those benefits go unused. So your EAPs, your wellness programmings, things like that. Sometimes those things aren't utilized to the degree that your benefits administrator would want them to be. And so they came to us and they said, why are people not using the things that we've got? And we're spending a lot of money. Can we leverage this somehow? And are we doing something that we should be doing? And so we engaged in a 2-year project with them to understand what's going on. And to boil all of that down, it really was about culture. It was about what is the culture of the organization. And employees would tell us that we did focus groups and surveys and all kinds of hybrid stuff with that. And what employees would tell us was if I have a bad call. So we were like in a call center. If I have a bad call, somebody yells at me on the other end of the phone, I want to step away from my desk, my manager kind of looks at me funny. And then I've got to make up that time that I walked away to kind of decompress myself. And so I'd rather just push through it, just get my work done and just go home on time. Or if I feel like I see other people who look like me who are taking advantage of the wellness benefits, I'm more likely to engage in those because I can see myself in them. That's a positive sense of identity and who I am and what's going on with the company culture. But it really came back to when your organizational culture was positive and affirming, employees took advantage of wellness and well-being initiatives at a higher level than when culture was, I wouldn't call it dysfunctional or toxic, but I would just call it benign. Like it wasn't a part of the narrative. Nobody really talked about it. It wasn't celebrated. It certainly wasn't baked into the everyday of work. And I think that well-being and wellness are really about the everyday experiences of work. How do I process that? Who do I have to talk to about things? Do I even have space in my day for 45 seconds to go, I'm going to pause, reset, and go into this meeting? As we talk about virtual and hybrid meetings, I don't know about you, but I'll have a meeting at 10, 10:30, 11, 12, 1, 2, 2:30, 3, where when we were meeting in person, we would never have done that because I have to walk to the physical meeting. We're now virtually one of the constraints is that we're probably not honest with ourselves and saying, I probably shouldn't put 9 meetings in a row on my calendar for Teams because I don't have a chance to get up and use the restroom or eat lunch or take a breath.
Or just be present. I mean, you may be in those 9 meetings, but are you present in those meetings? So yeah, I always recommend with people, give yourself 30 minutes. You also have to educate people on that because when people see you have open space on your calendar, if they're going in and doing that, they're like, oh, Brad's got like 45 minutes open. I'm just going to slide in there. But you're setting yourself up because there's no way you can be always on time to that if something runs over. And, you know, and so thinking about the culture and the organizations, leadership plays, and I know I've heard you speak on this too, such a tremendous role in this, in creating that. And I was thinking of an organization that I worked with recently, and we were doing something on mindfulness and talking about the importance of just mindful breaks. Like, you know, you just get up from your desk. But, you know, I had to challenge the leader of the group because a lot of people felt that while he was saying, you need to take these mindfulness breaks, you need to stop, take a break, they weren't seeing him do that.
That's right.
So that's even though we're saying that, you know, we're saying to do this, it's just what you said. So I really think about, you know, how important is it for leadership to model this? I mean, you know, to make, they make the culture, the number one reason why people leave is not because of the organization necessarily. You and I both know this. It's because of bad leadership. How do you really, when you're working with organizations, instill that, the importance into the leadership to say it has to start with you. This has to be modeled by you to be able to create this where people feel like it's okay.
I love this question. I'd like to answer it on two levels. One is, I think the leader archetype has significantly changed since COVID. What we ask leaders to do and the kind of work that they're taking on has shifted. And as much as the value proposition of work and how I think about work has changed, I also think the value proposition of leading today has changed. And people are saying, I don't think I, you know, I don't think I want the promotion, or I don't think I want to do this. And I think people are reevaluating the cost of leadership. And I think we have to be really honest about what we're asking leaders to do, what that looks like behaviorally, what that looks like emotionally, and then building in opportunities for leader self-care. How do our leaders, how do they care for themselves? Are they able to have space in their life? Are they able to own the first couple of minutes of their day before they get bombarded with emails and texts? And what kind of healthy boundaries do we set and do we allow for when it comes to leadership? And what does it mean to lead today? But to your point, I think that role modeling is everything. If I don't have anybody in my life who's ever role modeled healthy behaviors, like taking care of myself, or all the kinds of things that we would think about when we consider well-being and wellness, then how would I even know that the tool exists? I don't. The only thing that I would know would be the things that I've seen and experienced. And so for me, I think leaders not only set the tone for that, but I think they give psychological permission for people to then do those things. And I think a lot of people don't have psychological permission to be healthy, to be well, that the norm is you're sending emails at 2 o'clock in the morning, that you're back on your text as fast as possible, that, and we live in a world where if you don't get an instant response for something, something must be wrong. Like there must be a problem. And I tell my daughter all the time, baby, answering your phone is a choice. You don't have to answer that. You can call that person back. You can text that person later on, trying to role model that for her. The question is, in my own work life, how quick am I to come up after dinner to just triage my email real quick to get ready for the next day? And before we leave for school in the morning, I'm checking my email to make sure nothing's going on. And so, you know, I'm interrogating myself with this as much as I would anybody else. But the role modeling behavior, I think, really gives permission for the behaviors that we want to see and the direct connections that we know are there between work, leadership, mental and physical well-being.
Are you ready to activate hope and drive change? At Integrating Women Leaders Foundation, we're committed to developing leaders and enabling companies to maximize productivity. That's why we support Activating Hope, the podcast, your go-to source for leadership development and business best practices. Join us in breaking down barriers and creating equal opportunities for all. Discover programming that develops both personal and professional growth, and engage in bold conversations to address systemic challenges. Don't miss out. Learn more about how you can be part of this movement. Visit IWLFoundation.org. That's IWLFoundation.org today. Together, we can create a world where everyone has access to unlimited possibilities for success. Are you an artist struggling to bring your creative visions to life? Whether you're planning a multi-country tour, mounting a play at a local theater, or recording your first album, Before the Applause is here to guide you through every step of the way. Authored by industry experts Joe DeCenzi and Joe Hanna, this groundbreaking book offers artists the fundamentals of project management paired with leadership skills crucial to getting your artistic projects over the finish line. Unveiling Before the Applause, your ultimate guide to project management for artists.
So getting back to this, and you know, I will encourage sometimes when I'm working with clients, I'm like, you have to schedule this time sometimes to take a break. You know, like I mean, I know you and I are both big workout fans.
Yeah.
I know you and I like have our whole process that we do before we speak, where That's we get right. up, we work out. But if I didn't schedule that space, it would likely not happen. It's That's always, right. something's always going to come at the mercy of that. And so That's right. just kind of, and I mean, I know we have to like schedule our whole life, but it's just, but it's true. I mean, you know, you schedule just like a meeting, you know, I always make the joke, it's a meeting with myself. And yeah. those are the most important meetings. That's like the oxygen on yourself. Because if you're not doing that, at some point, you're not at a sustainable pace where you can yeah. be there for people.
If I'm not mistaken, yeah. I think we've worked out at the same gym we at have. An event together. And so
did.
We role modeled this behavior.
We did.
The scheduling piece of that, I know it sounds crazy and maybe wild and awkward for some, but I do schedule that time and I don't miss that time. And I also allow myself rest. So I have days that I might go to the gym and then I build in periods of rest and I have different things that I do on Saturdays to kind of refill. What I find is that when I take that time for myself, and you might agree with this, when I take that time for myself and I pay myself first, my day goes so much better.
It does.
So much better.
It doesn't when I, and I don't know if you've ever felt like this, but when I didn't get it in the morning,
yeah,
I was like angry all day, not towards anyone, but internally I was just like, I was like, oh, I should have gotten up this morning. I should have done that. And so, you know, when the alarm goes off at 5:30, do I love it? No. But at 7, when I'm done working out, do I love it? Yes.
That's right.
So
That's
right. it's that balance. Well, how can organizations measure and adapt to these changing employee engagement levels in real time? Because, I mean, it's like the culture part of it's huge, getting leadership on board to model it. But how do organizations go about this?
We are in a data revolution right now where, you know, for years and years and years, the same metrics have been used over and over and over again. And what we're seeing is that employees don't want to be an average score. They don't want to be a bar chart. They want to be a person. And they want to have their unique experience and their voice heard and empowered. And so what we're finding is data at the individual level is becoming a reality. And it's becoming something that we can do as we consider things like social network analysis. We consider different ways to measure culture, all the biometric stuff that we've got and how that feeds into systems. And now, I don't know about you, but some of the stuff that we can do now with artificial intelligence is absolutely blowing
it
my mind.
It's mind blowing. It's just like, you know, it's sometimes I feel bad. I'll tell my husband often I'm like, I don't even have to think about this.
Yeah.
I can just put it into AI and it cranks out, you know, I mean, and that's like, that's changing the game. I mean, changing the game.
Agreed. Here's what I love about it though, is what you just said. I can put this in a ChatGPT or an AI generator, and the things that used to take me hours to do, I can do in 45 seconds. And here, I wonder, how does that open us up for more human capacity? How does that open us up for more relationships, for more leaning into people? How I think AI is actually going to help us revolutionize the way that we build relationships and the capacity that we have for others, because I can shift left. I can shift those things that I don't need to necessarily worry about or that are pedestrian, and I can shift right to focus more on people. And that's what I hope comes from this. But the data analytics piece of this is significantly, significantly shifted. And so I would encourage anybody who's listening today to think about their data strategy. And is that data giving you information that's actually helping you lead better, create culture in different ways, engage employees differently? But I would encourage you to think deeply about how are we leveraging people analytics and what do we need to do today to prepare for the employees of tomorrow?
I love that because they're coming for us.
They're coming. My 14-year-old will be graduating from high school in 4 years.
Oh, that sounds crazy. Yeah,
it's wild.
It is wild. I just think about that. I'm like, goodness gracious. So it's either going to come for us and we're prepared or not. Yeah. You know, I mean, we've got time to figure that out.
Yeah, we do. And I think the jobs that my daughter will be applying for, I don't think they exist yet. I don't think we even know what they are. Or what to call them.
Wow, that's so exciting. I think of my niece Hazel, and I'm like, yeah, because she's got it narrowed down to a veterinarian, a chef, an artist. I'm like, be all of them.
Be all those, girl. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Be all of them. So what strategies can organizations implement to sustain this high engagement amid this economic, social uncertainties in the world of AI, like all these things we have going on?
Sure.
How do they implement and sustain this to like make it real and lasting?
Yeah. So the first, I think, is talk about it. Talk about it as something that's important. I really do believe that how work is experienced is just changing. And I think we should be really honest about when we say employee engagement, what does that mean here? Like, I know that there's a definition of it. And I spent the better part of my career arguing with people about nuances and words and definitions. And as I've gotten older, I care less and less about that. And I care more and more about how people feel in their work. And I think when we say we want employees to be engaged, we want our leaders to be engaged, we want, you know, our customers to be engaged, what does that profile look like? Like, what's the acceptable level of engagement behaviorally? I think we also then have to ask questions about what's acceptable levels of capacity? What's too much? We're at this precipice in time where we have a chance to step back for a second and say, we got some things right. Can we do some things better? And redefining what stress means, redefining what engagement means, redefining what leadership means, and how all of those things come together. I think that's one way, and that's talking about it. The second is, to your point earlier, role modeling what we mean by those things. And so it's not a corporate speak thing. I mean, engagement for engagement's sake is just a vacuum. And so when and where do we need higher levels of engagement? And I think one of the myths about engagement is that it is an endless reservoir that we can draw upon forever. And that's not true. Engagement has natural ebbs and flows, just like our life has natural peaks and valleys, where I've got times in my day where I'm at my best, right? Like 11 o'clock, I'm at my best right now. About 3 o'clock, Hope. It's nappy nap time.
And you know, the siesta is not a bad concept.
Not a bad concept.
It's not a bad concept. Mm-mm. I think we should have some nap breaks because you have to know when your energy, like you said, is high. What is it okay to take a break?
That's
and not
right.
just keep going and cranking it out because that won't get us there.
What I think has happened in some professions and industries, and we're seeing a reaction to this, is that for people in healthcare, education, frontline, they were very much called on to lean in really hard for a couple of years, like really hard. And that never came down. The expectation never dropped. It never dipped. And what I'm finding, and I think this is true in HR as well. I go to a lot of HR conferences and I'll say, are you guys tired? And you could see on their face, like, I'm exhausted and I don't know what to do about it. And so we create a space in that one moment for that hour or 2 hours where nobody has an expectation. And I can't think about it in your life. In almost every interaction that I have in my entire day, there's an expectation. And that's exhausting. And so rather than have an expectation, we can have I can anticipate what could be. I can anticipate what might be hopeful or joyful, or where I can use words like love and grace and community and friendship. That's the kind of environment that I think we can build when we talk about what we mean when we say engagement. Like what does that look like going forward?
I love that. I love the talking about it. And you know, there's a lot of people in the world right now that are not okay.
I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that.
I mean, probably, and I don't know if you feel like this, first time in my entire life where I have groups of friends right now that are not okay.
Yes.
And
yes.
Just being able to sit even, you know, beyond the organizational level, but on a personal level, being able to have conversations with people and say, I'm not okay right now.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
But then being able to go into the workplace
yep.
and not have to turn that off and not have to suppress that, because nobody cares if I'm not okay. You know, it's like we all have days we're not okay. We
sure.
get past it. But,
sure.
you know, for some people, it's a deep thing. And the only way that we're going to get through it is to talk our way through it and
yeah.
just and provide resources for people.
That's right.
You know, that's how do you get yourself past this?
Yeah. And I think that so I can't agree with you more. I had a friend of mine. I meet with a group of men on Saturday mornings at 6:30. And we just kind of go around, talk about our weeks and our days and stuff like that. And they came to this one friend and he said, guys, I'm not okay. And then he began to cry and you could see a release, emotional release from him. And at the end of it, I mean, he was fine. Everything was okay. But he was like, I just needed to say it out loud. Like, I'm not okay. I could use some help. I could use some support. And I love that we've destigmatized that saying that. I love that we've destigmatized that for everybody. I think sometimes guys have a hard time saying that. I'm not okay. I need some help. And so for me in my life, I will routinely text a couple of guys a week or a day. And I do this actually while I'm working out and I just check in. Hey bro, how are you doing? Are you good? What can I do for you? Any help? Just want you to know that I'm thinking about you today. And I think we need to be telling each other those things. And that's what I mean by creating more capacity. Like those are capacity building behaviors. And here's the reason why. And I believe this very deeply. And my wife gets credit for this. I take no credit for what I'm about to say. We can do hard things together. And I believe that. And so when life feels out of balance and unstable and all this crazy stuff and all these things happening all over the place, when I'm with people who I know love me and care about me, I can do just about anything. But when I'm by myself, those voices start. I feel disconnected. It feels dark. And I don't like that space. But I'm with people like you, Hope, and your husband and some of the friends that we have. We light up in the room because we know we're supported and we can do hard things together. But when I'm not with other people, it can feel really hard sometimes.
Very isolated.
Yeah.
Very alone.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and
totally.
I love that you just text random texts. As you know, my mom passed away this year on Valentine's Day. And unfortunately, yeah. I had three other friends within 2 months lost their parent too.
Wow.
A death. So there were four of us. We have these just texts that we send each other on the first birthdays, you know, on the first Christmases and just checking
totally.
In. But one of the things that I read in one of the grief books that I was reading is about when you're doing that. And you said you just did this and I love it, is when you're texting somebody is not putting pressure of like asking a question, how are you doing? Because then there's the pressure of, well, I might not be doing well, but then I feel guilty if I don't answer your text, which the text is not about that, is just simply saying what you just said, thinking about you today. Just wanted you to know that. And I thought that was so lovely. And it doesn't have to be as drastic as losing someone, losing a parent, but it could just be, you know, somebody's going through, you know, a really difficult time in their job right now, or, you know, with a sick parent or sick children or just a divorce, but just reaching out and saying, I'm just thinking about you.
Yeah.
How much that can change somebody from feeling that dark space, as you said, of like,
huge.
There's nobody out there, that today somebody thought about me.
Yeah. One of the work things I do at the university, I have the chance right now to lead a group of faculty. So we have faculty meetings, which are about as exciting as they sound.
I've been in those. I know what you mean.
You know.
Yes, yes.
One of the things that we do before we get started, and I stole this from Brené Brown. And if your listeners have not read Dare to Lead,
Highly recommend.
Go buy the book. Go buy the book right now and read the book cover to cover and then reread the book. But one of the things she talks about in there is a two-word check-in. And so we go around the room, and there's just six or seven of us. And I ask people to just two words that describe where you are today in this meeting. And they can be anything. And there's no judgment. There's no you don't have to explain yourself. Just two quick words. And that gives people permission to say, you know, your two words are, I have anxiety and I'm stressed. Great. We know where you are now. Or I'm hopeful and I'm excited. Okay, great. Now we know where you are. And so when the meeting begins, we are all grounded in the same place. And again, there's no pressure. There's not an expectation for anybody to do anything differently. It's just I'm giving space to vocalize kind of where your heart and where your head is in that moment. And that's worked out. That's worked out really well for
us. I love that. I'm going to shamelessly steal that from from Brené Brown.
please do.
Well, it's just like that check-in of being present with where we are.
That's
and
right.
Not always, because generally when we're at work, we're at home, we're home at work. We're never just present. We're always worried about something. So just identifying that and be able to, again, talk about it. And if you're not okay, it's okay.
It's okay.
Well, I know that you are always my friend that is on the cutting edge of like what is out there next. Like, what are you most curious this day? Where's your research taking you now with all of this? Because I think there's so much more to unpack.
Yeah.
So much more. But just curious where that's at right now.
Yeah. For me, I've spent a lot of time thinking about the future of work as a field and how work is being kind of redesigned in some ways, how our healthcare systems are being redesigned, how our education systems are being redesigned, how our consumer systems are being redesigned and what that's looking like. And that plays a part in this idea of engagement. And I wonder, what I'm curious about is there a next metric that we need to be paying attention to? And I don't know the answer to that yet. Like, employee engagement came out of the 1990s. Gallup helped popularize that. You know, employee engagement didn't exist in the 50s and the 40s and the 30s. So I wonder, like, for us, like, what's the next indicator for us? And because I think engagement is going to get redefined in some ways. And I think some really important ways where it's back in line with that value proposition again. And I'm thinking a lot about how work is decentralized. Some of the themes that I think going into 2025, 2026 are that I expect work to both slow down and speed up at the same time. Work is going to feel in spaces really fast and furious. And then I think there's going to be some disciplines that get developed around slowing down very strategically and focusing on those things that add the most value, that add the most efficiencies, that add the most engagement, that add the most productivity, and that we're going to redefine what good work means. I also think we're going to see what we might call essential workers, who we found out they're very essential during COVID.
Very.
That those positions will get elevated, and I think they'll be redefined in some ways. And I look forward to that. I think employee engagement is going to be redefined as not a number, but as an individual around purpose and belonging. Again, that's going to be really important. And then upskilling and reskilling is where my mind is. I haven't been into an establishment in months where somebody's not saying, hey, I'm sorry, we're a little slow, we're understaffed right now, or there's a now hiring sign. And there's this really interesting thing happening where we're both trying to recruit, and yet there's all these open positions, and yet there's this mismatch. Like, I have friends who are trying to find jobs right now and they can't find jobs, and I'm like, literally, there are jobs everywhere. They're like, I can't get a call back. Like, I don't know what to do. And so I think about how we upskill and reskill our workforce. And it's possible that the talent we need is in our organization right now. And we need to think differently about how we upskill and provide provide opportunities. The other thing is the idea of learning velocity, I think, is going to become really, really important. How fast can we learn? And is learning velocity a skill that we can train or teach? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that yet.
Well, I know who I'm going to stand by to learn all these things from. And that would be you.
Oh, you're so kind. I was going to say your husband.
Oh, good Lord. Well, yeah.
Me and Joe.
Joe's got his other talents, but yeah. I can't wait to see what comes next from your research. So
thank you.
If I had to just kind of, as we're winding down our conversation, what would be your best piece of advice for leaders that are listening to us today to activate hope when it comes to employee engagement? Like, where on an individual level, because we've talked about, you know, organizationally, but as a leader out there listening to this conversation, what is your best advice to just get this started if it's not really ingrained in your organization yet?
Yeah. So I love the word hope. I love that that's your name. I also love that the word, when we speak the word hope out loud, you see people physically respond to that, because I think right now hope is a lot of what we need. And believing, for me, hope is a belief that the future will be better and that I can be a part of that. And if I was going to give advice to leaders, I think employee engagement can feel really big. I think, you know, we talk about organizational culture. It's so big. Like, how do I even possibly make a dent in this? I would start with the people. If you look to your left, then you look to your right. I'd start with those people, and I would check in, and I would make a practice of reaching out to a few people and just connecting with them. I might think about how I create space in meetings to have conversations that we need to have. I would think about, what are the ways in which I can celebrate milestones, and I can celebrate events with people? I was given a talk a couple of weeks ago, and one of the leaders from the back raised his hand. He said, you know, my biggest regret in my entire leadership career is that I didn't celebrate more with my team. He said, I would have taken every opportunity I could to celebrate the people that are around me, because I could tell them that I cared for them. Like, that was a way that I could help them feel like they were a part of. And you could see the room, like, visibly and emotionally, like the climate of the room shifted. I would start there. It doesn't have to be anything big. It's the tiny things. And then I would ask any leader, leadership oftentimes isn't about you, but it does sometimes start with you, right? And so it's not about all the good things that I do and all the amazing things that I can do and look at me, I'm so important. It really is about others and serving and leaning in and caring for other people, caring about their well-being and all the things that we've talked about today. So I would wonder, how does the leader, maybe the one leader that's listening today, that says, well, how are you caring for yourself? What are the things that you're doing? How are you pouring into? Are you overextended? Are there places in your life where you can delegate? Is your candle literally burning at both ends? Because if at some point those flames, they meet, and then there's a fizzle and there's a burnout that happens with that. And so before we get there, what are ways in which we're rejuvenating our sense of purpose and what our life is and what our work is in ways that align with hope? And help creating hope for people.
I love that. Well, and you know, I say, if I can't give people hope, then I need to change my name.
You don't need to change your name. Trust me.
I'm keeping it. Mom and Dad and everybody always asks me, where did your name come from? From the World's Fair. They saw the Hope Diamond at the World's Fair.
I love this.
So yes, but unfortunately, that diamond the people that owned it always brought, it brought bad luck to all those that owned it. So that's why now it's in the Smithsonian in Washington, yes. D.C. Because hope is not meant to be owned. And I'm like, I like that.
Ooh,
I like that. It's not meant to be owned. It's meant to be given, you know? So, and I truly believe that. I love that.
That's amazing.
And it has been such a pleasure. I mean, I know we keep up and follow up, but we have got to get in touch more. I always enjoy talking with you, learning from you, and you've shared so much with our listeners today that I know they're going to get so much from this conversation. But if they have any follow-up or would just like to reach out to you, what's the best way they can find you?
Yeah, the best way to find me is at my website, drbshuck.com. My email is listed there, but my email is brad.shuck@gmail.com. So pretty easy, but Dr. B. Shuck is the best way to get a hold of me. If I can answer any questions, share any of the research, a lot of the research that we talked about today is free and available online. We paid for the paywall to come down on that work so that we can share that out with as many people as possible. And I'd be happy to share any of that or any of the resources that we have available with anybody listening today.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you and the work that you do and the person that you are and the hope that you bring to the world as well. So thank you so much again for being with us today. And I look forward to catching up with you.
Can't wait. Thank you so much, Hope.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. Now go activate your hope. And we look forward to seeing you next time.